Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Old Money Book, How to Live Better While Spending Less, by Byron Tully, is a personal finance and lifestyle guide built around the habits associated with America's established upper class. First released in 2013, the book does not present old money mainly as inherited wealth, but as a culture of values, restraint, education, responsibility, and long-term decision-making. They have been no and after. Its purpose is to show readers from any background how to improve their financial position and quality of life by adopting practices that reduce waste, avoid conspicuous consumption, and increase social credibility. Tully's approach combines money management, etiquette, dress, family priorities, and personal conduct into one practical framework. Rather than promising rapid wealth, the book argues that durable prosperity is usually the result of disciplined behavior repeated over time. Its appeal lies in treating class signals and spending habits as learnable patterns, while also warning that wealth without judgment can disappear quickly. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, old money is a code of conduct rather than a bank balance. A central idea of the Old Money Book is that old money should be understood as a culture and behavioral code, not simply as inherited assets. Tully presents the established upper class as guided by values such as discipline, integrity, privacy, education, self-control, and long-term responsibility. This framing matters because it shifts the reader's attention away from visible wealth and toward the habits that preserve resources across time. In the book's logic, money is only one result of a deeper structure of choices. A person can have wealth and still behave in ways that quickly destroy it, while someone with modest means can develop habits that improve stability and opportunity. This also explains why the book differs from conventional budgeting guides. It is less interested in spreadsheet techniques than in the social and moral habits that make good financial decisions more likely. The code of conduct includes how one spends, dresses, speaks, forms relationships, handles obligations, and thinks about the future. By defining old money as a transferable philosophy, Tully makes the subject accessible to readers who were not born into wealth, while still emphasizing that imitation without discipline is not enough. Secondly, living below one's means as a strategy for freedom and discretion, the book's subtitle, How to Live Better While Spending Less, reflects one of its most practical themes. Reducing unnecessary spending is not treated as deprivation, but as a way to increase independence. And Tully contrasts this approach with status consumption, where people use clothes, cars, houses, restaurants, and entertainment to signal success. In the old money framework, excessive display is financially inefficient and socially revealing. It attracts attention, creates obligations, and often ties identity to spending. Living below one's means, by contrast, preserves capital and lowers pressure. The reasoning is not merely that saving money is good, but that lower fixed costs create options. A person who avoids lifestyle inflation can leave an unsuitable job, invest gradually, weather emergencies, or choose education and travel over luxury goods. The book's argument is also aesthetic and social understated quality is preferable to expensive novelty. Durable clothing, functional homes, and restrained habits communicate stability without demanding constant replacement. This theme makes the book unusual within lifestyle writing, because it rejects the assumption that higher social standing requires higher spending. Tully's version of refinement depends more on selectivity, maintenance, and restraint than on visible abundance. Thirdly, dress, manners, and presentation as low-cost social capital. Tully gives attention to dress, manners, and everyday presentation because he sees them as practical tools for improving access to people and opportunities. The book does not treat appearance as vanity alone. It treats appearance as a form of social communication that can either reduce friction or create unnecessary barriers. Clothing that is clean, appropriate, durable, and understated helps a person move through professional and social settings without making wealth, insecurity, or ambition too obvious. Manners work similarly. Politeness, punctuality, discretion, and respect for others allow a person to be trusted in environments where reputation matters. The economic reasoning is clear. Many forms of presentation cost little compared with the opportunities they may protect. A reader does not need luxury brands to appear competent, but does need judgment about fit, occasion, and behavior. This emphasis separates the book from purely financial titles because it recognizes that social mobility is not only mathematical. People are often evaluated through signals of reliability, self-command, and cultural fluency. Tully's advice can be read as an attempt to make those signals conscious and learnable. The limitation is that such codes can feel traditional. But the practical point is that presentation influences how others assess credibility. Fourthly, windfalls and inheritance require delay before decision. One of the most concrete lessons associated with Tully's old money philosophy concerns inheritances and other financial windfalls. His guidance emphasizes deciding in advance how to respond, because grief, excitement, and novelty can distort judgment. The principle is simple: allow a very small portion for immediate enjoyment, then leave the overwhelming majority untouched for a substantial cooling-off period. The exact example often associated with his advice is to spend 1% freely and wait several months before acting on the rest. The value of this method is psychological as much as financial. It acknowledges that people may need to satisfy the emotional urge to celebrate or relieve pressure, but it prevents that urge from consuming the entire sum. Waiting also reveals which proposed purchases were impulsive and which uses remain sensible after reflection. This topic supports the book's larger claim that wealth preservation depends on systems established before temptation appears. A windfall can accelerate independence if invested, saved, or allocated carefully, but it can also disappear through lifestyle upgrades and emotional spending. Tully's advice is memorable because it converts a broad virtue, self-control, into a practical rule that readers can apply before money arrives. Lastly, social elevation through preparation, opportunity, and options. The Old Money Book connects personal refinement and financial discipline to a broader goal, increasing access to resources, opportunities, and options. And Tully's argument is not only that readers should save money or behave well, but that these habits place them in a better position to participate in networks where trust, competence, and reliability matter. Education, disciplined spending, social awareness, and appropriate presentation can make a person more employable, more welcome in serious professional circles, and better prepared when opportunities appear. The book's concept of elevation is therefore practical rather than purely aspirational. It assumes that social standing affects who receives information, introductions, chances, and support. At the same time, Tully frames responsible behavior as a duty, not just a tactic. Old money at its best is associated with community-mindedness, restraint, and raising productive adults, rather than with snobbery or entitlement. This gives the book a moral dimension that distinguishes it from guides focused only on networking or luxury aesthetics. Its limitation is that readers may disagree with the value placed on traditional upper-class norms. Still, the book's useful insight is that options are built through repeated preparation, not through sudden reinvention. In conclusion, The Old Money Book is best suited for readers interested in the intersection of personal finance, social behavior, and understated lifestyle design. It will be especially useful for young adults, professionals trying to control lifestyle inflation, people expecting or managing a windfall, and readers who want a practical explanation of why restraint can be socially and financially powerful. Its benefits are both practical and intellectual. Practically, it encourages lower expenses, better presentation, delayed gratification, and more deliberate choices around money. Intellectually, it reframes class not only as income or inheritance, but as a set of habits, values, and signals that influence opportunity. Compared with many personal finance books, it stands out because it does not focus mainly on investing formulas, debt payoff systems, or entrepreneurial tactics. Compared with etiquette or style books, it is more explicitly tied to financial preservation and social mobility. The result is a hybrid guide, part money manual, part conduct book, part critique of conspicuous consumption. Readers should approach it as a perspective rather than a complete financial plan, since it offers principles more than technical instruction. Its distinctive contribution is the argument that spending less, behaving carefully, and presenting oneself with restraint can create a richer life than visible luxury ever could. If you would like to support Byron Tully, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.